History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold, and they don't have to go untold. If only we might take the initiative to ask a few questions and then take the time to patiently listen as long-buried memories are stirred up. Our goal here is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in that process, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we truly are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. This weekend, the Pratt family in Fresno, California, is gathering to celebrate the 100th birthday of a Pearl Harbor survivor. Bill Pratt was on the battleship USS Nevada on December 7, 1941, and so was his older brother, Basil. There were six Pratt children growing up in Illinois, Kentucky, and Oklahoma, two girls and four boys. So, Bill, how did you fit into that mix in terms of birth order?
I was the next to the oldest brother. The girls were the oldest, and then there was my older brother, and I had two younger brothers.
And I know your older brother served in the war. Did your two younger brothers end up in the military, too?
Yes, they did. Both of them were in the service before the war was over, yeah.
So all four brothers served in World War II?
Yes.
So for those of us who didn't live through the Great Depression, you're a kid when that hit. What do you remember about those years? What was life like where you were?
Life was pretty rough. Most of the time, you know, my dad worked here and there, and we traveled around the country, and he worked wherever he could, and he didn't have a steady job for long, but he managed to feed his family, and it was like that until World War II became imminent, you know, and then things began to pick up, and things got a lot better.
What were some of the things you did as a kid? I imagine it's different from what boys do these days. Do you remember some of the chores you had to do or the things you did for fun?
Most of the things we had, we made. I remember a contraption. It was just a post with a long board on it and a seat on each end of the board, and the thing, somebody would push us around. It was a dangerous thing, but we used it. That's all we had at that time. I remember the state fair in Oklahoma City every year. I would somehow manage to go to that, but that's about all. I think Alfalfa Bill was the biggest thing. I know I liked the carnival atmosphere that it had, and all of the rides, and they had exhibits, you know, we went to see, and I enjoyed it because it was a place to go, and we didn't really have much entertainment back in that day. It really keep us, we'd go every day and sneak in.
Oh, you weren't buying tickets, huh?
No, we managed to get in under the fence or something.
You snuck under the fence?
Yeah, get into the grounds, but we didn't have much money to spend on the activity, the rides, or anything they had to show. We didn't have much money for that, but I know we sneaked into the tent. I think they call her the Hairy Lady. Oh, and they talked her up real big on the outside to get people in, but she was just an old woman. Kind of a disappointment, but...
Yeah, those are famous for that kind of stuff, right? So how'd you get along with all your siblings?
Well, I was closest to my brother Basil. He was older than I, and I usually followed him along whenever he done, I'd done. And he went into the service first, but I went in less than a year after he did. We served on the same ship out in Nevada.
So when your big brother decided to go into the Navy, America's not at war yet. Was that kind of a big deal for your family to have him join the Navy?
Well, you know, that was back during the Depression. And when we got big enough to work, there wasn't no paying jobs for us. We usually went into the service when we got old enough to gain some income. My folks were pretty poor then, and we helped. I always sent money at home when I was in the service, even after through the war. But we were always helping the family.
What was your motivation? What made you want to join the Navy?
It was a job, a paying job. That's the only paying job that a young fella could get back then, join the service. And that's what we done.
Did you know what you were getting into?
Not really, but I was adventurous. I was looking forward to it.
Where did they send you for boot camp, and what was that like?
Great Lakes, Illinois. That was a very strict, disciplined place at boot camp. And then I was transferred later. After I got through the boot camp, I went to the USS Nevada.
Yeah, and a lot of people have heard about what happened later in the war with the five Sullivan brothers on the USS Juno, and after that they wouldn't let brothers serve together. But there were dozens and dozens of pairs of brothers in the fleet on the same ship, even at Pearl Harbor.
Seven brothers on the Nevada. There were seven brothers on it.
You mean seven from the same family?
Yeah.
Patton brothers.
Yeah, that's who it was, Patton brothers.
Yes, the Patton brothers from Iowa. There were seven of them on the Nevada before the war. Gilbert, Marvin, Bick, Allen, Ted, Ray, and Bruce. Ted's enlistment was complete in October of 1941, so he wasn't aboard on December 7th, but the other six were. I have a link to the story of those Patton brothers for you online at hometownheroesradio.com. But Bill, you and Basil were on the Nevada together. Were you thinking that life aboard ship might be a little easier with your big brother around?
I don't know. I was just in the habit of following him, I think. But at that time, if you had a brother serving somewhere, well, you could put in for it and you'd probably get it. They like for brothers to serve on the same ship. But after the war started and all those five brothers were killed, they wouldn't let brothers serve on the same ship.
Had you ever in your life been on a ship before?
No, but it was sort of an adventure for me. That we slept in hammocks, even on the ship. They had places to put your hammock up and sleep in it at night. They were pretty strict in their discipline, and you had to learn to do things on the ship to keep it clean and keep it well painted, and it was a full-time job, just scraping paint. We were at sea most of the time, and the salt water would make the paint peel, and we'd have to scrape it off the old paint. That was a big job we had to do. And we had to make other repairs on the ship. It seems like metal decks were covered with wood, and we had to keep that, we call it holy stone, but it was just a brick on it. It had an indentation on it, and you had something like a broom handle that you put in that place that was hollowed out. And we used to go over the deck with that brick, pushing that brick on that stone, the whole line of us, you know. We kept the deck clean, and it looks clean all the time. And there was dirty because we kept it clean. Either washed it off or it got stained. Well, we had the holy stone, they call it holy stone. Run the holy stone over that wood, make it down to where it was clean again.
What were your duties on the ship, and what were your brother's duties?
Well, I was in a deck division. My duty was to help. We had a certain part of the ship to keep clean. Fifth division, we had guns. We manned the casemate guns and 5-inch guns up on the boat deck, and then we had to keep that part of the ship clean.
And what about Basil? Did he have a different role?
Well, there again, he went first, and I followed along. We were in the same division, really, until the war started.
You say the war started, and obviously that's the point of demarcation for everything now. But before that, I mean, you don't know there's going to be a war. Was there any scuttlebutt that the Japanese might come or that something was imminent?
Oh, yes. I mean, we were preparing for it. We were preparing for war, and Pearl Harbor was the main institution for the Navy. We had a lot of ships there, a lot of repair facilities and so forth in Pearl Harbor. For the Navy, they had dry docks and everything. Our home port was Honolulu before the war, but after the war, well, eventually I went on into, I signed up for submarine service, and I spent the rest of the war on the submarine.
And I'm wondering what you can tell me about what the island was like, what Hawaii was like, this paradise was like before the attack on Pearl Harbor. I don't know how much time you got to spend around there, but do you have some stories of what it was like before that?
Yeah, the Royal Hawaiian Hotel was the main elite hotel on the island. That's where all the people with money stayed when they come there. But, you know, after the war started, the Navy took it over, and we got to live over at the Royal Hawaiian for a while. But we had the main part of our Navy was at Hawaii, because that's where they were likely to strike first, or that was sort of an advanced position for us. And actually, that's where they struck first, at Pearl Harbor. I was on the battle then. My battle station was in the shaft alley. That was down in the bottom of the ship where the main engine, we had two main engine rooms, and the main engine drive shaft that went from the engine back to the propeller, where it moved back to the outside the ship, and that was housed in a certain compartment in there. That was a battle station for somebody, usually two men. It was two compartments. You had to just make sure that, well, the main shaft from the engine to the propeller went through this compartment and out of the ship, and you had to make sure that the struts of the bearings were getting oiled, and for leaks and stuff like that. And I was in the starboard engine room. My brother was over in the port engine room, but that's where we served, down the engine room. They attacked us at 8 o'clock in the morning at Pearl Harbor. That was Sunday morning. They were raising a flag all over the harbor and on those different ships, and you could hear they would play a bugle, or if they had a band, they'd play the Star Spangled Banner when they raised the flag in the morning, because it was in port. We raised the flag every morning, and we struck it every night. It didn't fly at night, and there was a procedure for that. Of course, if you were at sea, the flag flew on the mainmast all the time, night and day. About halfway up was the place for it. But raising and the lowering of the flag was an event that I remember, because that's something you done every day. It was important.
So were you topside for that?
Yeah, sometimes if I was involved in raising or the flag, there was a detail that marched the flag back and put it on the pole and raised it at sunrise every morning, and at sunset at night, we would go back and get it.
And what about that Sunday morning? Were you up top for that, or were you down below?
It was Sunday morning. I didn't have anything to do. I was just laying around in the quarters. Of course, I began to hear bombs going off, but I didn't know there were bombs. And when I hit our ship, then it shook it. And I started to go up on topside and see what was going on when General Quarters sounded. So I had to go down the engine room. I had my battle station was back in the shaft alley. It was scary for me, because I was down there by myself. Then the lights went out. Generators got hit, and the power was off for a while. The lights went out everywhere on the ship. But I was back in that shaft alley by myself. It was dark, and it was scary, because I didn't know what was going on. I knew the ship was listed to the port side. We had been hit on the port side. Torpedo planes had got to the port side, and that's what I was noticing. The ship was listed to the port side. We'd already heard that it was the Oklahoma that capsized. The USS Oklahoma was hit on the port side, and they capsized. The thing turned bottom side up. The water in the harbor is shallow. No ship sunk. They didn't go out of sight. You could see part of them. There was a lot of destruction. I didn't see it. I wasn't up on top side to see it. I had to go to my battle station. But we stayed there until we were released. They had the bugle call that went out over the loudspeaker.
Well, let me ask you this first, and we'll get to that. Because most of the Pearl Harbor survivors I've talked to, there was some point, you know, initially most of them thought this was some kind of drill or maneuver, and then there was a point of realization that this is actually an attack. What about you? Was there a time where you didn't know what was happening, or you weren't sure?
At the beginning, I heard the planes. The dive bombers were diving on us. You could hear the engine laborers that come out of the dives, but planes would practice in peacetime. They would dive on us and just for practice. And I didn't know whether it was that or it was a real thing, but it was a real thing. You could hear them, the planes dive, and when they come out of the dive, they dropped their bomb. Well, the engine would make a laboring noise that you could hear, and I could hear that down the engine room.
So when did it sink in for you that this was the real thing, that you were at war?
Well, I don't know. I went to my battle station. I began to feel the ship getting hit, and it would either shake or it would lift over to one side, or it would do something. When a bomb would hit, you knew it.
It's time for our first break, but there's quite a bit to come with Pearl Harbor survivor Bill Pratt of Fresno, California. He's turning 100 this weekend. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for photos and some video clips of Bill. And Hometown Heroes will come right back after this. I always love hearing from listeners, and so many of you tell me you listen to Hometown Heroes while you're on the road. Nobody spends more time on the road than our friends in the trucking business. And if that's your business, I'm sure you know about Central Valley Trailer Repair. If you don't, you really should. Conveniently located near California's major transportation arteries, CVTR has stockpiles of parts waiting for you in Fresno and in Stockton, with experienced service technicians ready to handle even the most difficult of repairs. Central Valley Trailer Repair is an authorized Great Dane sales, parts, and service center, and you can always find a huge inventory of new and used semi-trailers for sale too. Dry freight, refrigerated, flatbed, whatever you're looking for, CVTR has you covered. How about 24-hour emergency service? You bet. What can't CVTR help you with? That's a question I can't answer, so you'll have to ask them yourself at 1-800-877-8444. That's 1-800-877-8444. The website, that's simple, cvtr.com. For Central Valley Trailer Repair, and tell them you heard about them on Hometown Heroes.